And we're live. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Mr. and Mrs. Friendly Ex-Muslim podcast. I have a special guest for you today, Ishmael. And I was talking to him on, we talked on a couple of different platforms now due to some of the changes in my life. And, you know, I ran into Ishmael when I watched his video on Pints with Aquinas. And that was a really interesting conversation. In fact, that video has almost 400,000 views now. It's really one of the popular ones on the channel. And so I was like, you know, this guy sounds interesting. And we wanted to talk to you. So yeah, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Good, good, good. Yeah. So other than the, you know, the life changes and all that, can't complain, right?
Can I ask how that's going? Like, have you able to find a different job?
Yeah. So in terms of the job loss situation, so my like 9 to 5 is I work in like tech. And so that's been my bread and butter for the last years. The YouTube channel has been kind of something I did on the side. It wasn't like I was never living off it, right? Although the money had helped. And so I said, okay, look, I lost my job. This might be an opportunity. I don't know if it's going to end up being a full-time thing for me just because of how expensive life is. YouTube is so unreliable for income. You know, people tend to drop off on Patreon after like several months anyway. So financially, being the main breadwinner of the family, having kids, having a mortgage, it doesn't seem like it's like financially completely feasible. So I'm looking into like potentially doing some contract work or going back to full-time work and then doing this again on the side. But my wife, Huda, she is continuing to do this full-time for now as well. So
yeah.
Oh, awesome.
But I will say though, Abdullah, like, since we met and, you know, I'm not trying to like take all the credit here or like make myself sound so wonderful, but since we started working together on this, like the subs have grown, the income has grown, right?
Yeah.
So, but it's still not, yeah, it's up and down, but it has grown in a significant way. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It might be sustainable for the full-time income, maybe in a year, I don't know. But for now, like as long as I have time, I'm going to keep working on it and getting this, you know, continuing to do what I love, continuing to talk to people about things that matter. And, you know, like this is what's important. So I want to keep doing it as much as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, life's expensive, man. Like I even just like people have given me donations and stuff, but I cannot quit my job to do this. Like right now I'm good.
Yeah.
My job is good. I'm doing okay. And if I quit my job, like half my income goes just to rent alone. So like life's hard out here. So yeah.
Canada is, so we're both in Canada. So Ishmael's on the opposite side. I'm on the opposite side, but life is expensive. Life in Toronto is even more expensive, right? Like the rent here, like 3,000.
Yeah. I don't know how people are alive in Toronto.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, like I was saying, I really liked your conversation with, I think his name is Matt, right? Matt Fouad?
Yeah. Matt Fred.
Yeah. Sorry, what is it?
Matt Fred.
Yeah. So really enjoyed that conversation and wanted to actually go through your story again and we can have a conversation. So as I understand it, you are an ex-Muslim Christian.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay, so why don't we start with your background, like your family background? I think you said your parents are from Egypt.
So
one of your parents.
My dad's from Egypt. He is a Sunni Muslim from Egypt, and my mom actually grew up as a Jehovah's Witness in Canada.
Oh, and, interesting.
Yeah, and she basically grew up in like small town Nova Scotia. Like the only immigrant family there was one Lebanese family that's been there for 80 years. Like she didn't really know anything about anything outside of North America. But her friend actually fell in love with my dad's brother because my dad was in like the military at the time, in the Egyptian military, and they were doing some training or something with the Canadian military. So they had to go to the Halifax because that's where the port is. And so his brother was with him and he met a woman and then so they had a wedding, and my dad and my mom met at that wedding. That's how they knew each other. And I'm not sure if it was 3 weeks to 3 months, but I do remember my dad telling me, like, he didn't really propose. He was just like, he told my mom, like, hey, do you want to get married? And she's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. We can do it next Friday. And they just went to the court and did it next Friday. And that was the whole marriage that happened. Like, it literally happened very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And then my dad had to go back to Egypt because he wasn't a Canadian citizen. And there was a whole 9 yards there. Mm-hmm. And then he eventually came back and he started businesses in Nova Scotia. And then our lives have always been in between Canada and in the Middle East. That's always how it's been. Mm-hmm. So even when I was growing up, I was always Canadian. Mm-hmm. But I went to school in Egypt. That's how I always saw it. I never saw myself as like an Egyptian, even though I am. But it was like the place I went to for school. And then during the summer and winter breaks, I'd go back home to Canada. So I was always a Canadian first.
So you grew up in Canada and then you eventually had to go. So maybe talk about that. So you grew up here in Nova Scotia, you said, right?
Yeah. So from the age of like 0 to 5, I was just in Nova Scotia. And one of the main reasons they actually wanted me to go to Egypt was because there's this Islamic school here in Halifax. And Halifax is not a big city, so it's not very hard to find out where this Islamic school is. But they basically were teaching Islam. And my dad and my mom kind of found out that like they weren't really teaching me anything at all. They literally let us take naps. They were like...
No, like, an Islamic school not teaching you anything? I'm so surprised.
Right? Crazy. Mashallah, guys, it's amazing. During amazing Quran time, I'll never forget this. It's one of my earliest memories. During Quran time, I was so bored, and they were just like, there's this room, and there's like 10 kids sleeping on mats, and then I was like, okay, I'll sleep too. That was the level of education. I was like, Allah loves you, go to bed. And I was like, okay, thank you. Which is better than better than other forms of Islam, so I'll give them that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have that vibe too, because I've been to Newfoundland, and I saw this small little mosque. That's kind of the vibe you have in those communities. It's like a mosque that has like 10 people or some 20 people or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like everyone knows each other because they all came at the same time to Canada, and nothing's really radical. It's just like, I guess like my Islam was like my dad taught me everything, and like I believed in it fully, but it was more like, don't eat pork, don't drink alcohol, be moral, and then you're good. I call it the sola fide Islam, because it was like, if you believe it, you're going to heaven. That's what my dad said. It's like, you can sin as much as you want, but if you believe that Muhammad's a prophet, you're going to heaven. Yeah. That was kind of what was taught to me. And I didn't realize till later that that's actually not true, but
yeah.
So I just have a question for you, Ish. So your mom was a Jehovah Witness and your dad was a Muslim. So how did that conversation go? Did your dad just say to your mom, like, this is the religion we're raising them with and that's it? Like, was there a choice here? Like, how did that go when your mom was trying to go to church and, you know, wanting to bring you guys? Like, how did this play out?
So my mom, I should have said this, but my mom left the JW religion when she was like 14.
Oh, and okay.
It was a big deal because in that religion, you kind of get shunned for leaving. And so she lost a lot of family members, and now they talk to her, but like for years there, like no one talked to her. Mm-hmm. And basically when she met my dad, she just didn't want any religion at all. Mm. They kind of came to a conclusion. My dad wasn't always very devout. He was Muslim light for a long time. And so he was like, yeah, okay, like we'll just teach him good morals if you have kids. But the issue happened when going to Egypt, the law was Sharia law, basically. And it was basically saying that because my mom was considered a Christian under Islamic law, my brother and I could be taken away if my dad dies and be given to my uncles. And my mom's like, that's not happening, like over my dead body. So my mom literally, when she found that out the same day, she went down to Al-Azhar Mosque, which is like the big Sunni Muslim area, and literally converted just like overnight. It's like, all right, I'm Muslim now. And then she never believes it, but like on paper, she's Muslim now.
Wow.
Just because like she didn't want anyone to take her kids.
That's so interesting. Wow. So in Egypt, if the father passes and the mother isn't a Muslim, they're going to take the kids away, and because they want them to be raised with Islam. Yeah. Wow.
They can bring it to court and make an argument that they shouldn't be raised by the Christian.
Wow. That's insane.
So like you guys, go ahead.
But yeah, so like from age of like This is before I was born. So this is when my brother was born. And she would keep going back and forth from Egypt. And she found out that, like, if my dad died while she was in Egypt, and my dad's an Egyptian citizen, they would take my brother.
What a beautiful religion. If your father passes, yeah, they would rather give the kids to somebody in the family rather than, you know, keep them with their mom, who they should be with. And so she converts like under basically like duress, right? Like coercion, like that's awful. I didn't know that. I know in different countries, like if you leave Islam or, you know, like for me, for instance, like the country my daughter's father was from, if we were there, she would be taken from me because, you know, obviously like I remarried, there's that component of it. And I left Islam. So, but Egypt, that's pretty crazy. Your mom wouldn't even get custody of you.
No, she wouldn't.
Wow. That's awful.
Yeah. She basically did it just for the safety of the children, which like kudos to my mom, honestly.
And who wouldn't? What mother wouldn't, right? Like I would do that too if I had to, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were saying you guys were in this like religious school. So first of all, your dad, here's an interesting thing too. Your dad wasn't religious, but he wanted you guys to be in this like Islamic school. Why was that?
So he became religious right before like my brother was born. So I don't know what happened, but he met this person and he taught him all about like Islam and why he has to take the faith seriously. And my dad kind of had like this conversion overnight where he basically came home and stopped smoking like cigarettes. He threw all the alcohol down the drain. And this was traumatizing for my mom. Like my mom, she grew up with JW, had to literally run away from that religion, was promised that there'll be no religion in the household. And then overnight, my dad has this huge conversion and throws away all the alcohol, brings in a Quran, starts praying like Salah. And my mom's never seen Salah before. Like, this is like, again, remember, she's middle of nowhere, Nova Scotia. She's never seen this in her life. So just imagine this happening. And my mom said she was so traumatized from growing up JW that she was even scared to hold the Quran because she would have thought that like she would go right to hell. Like she had like those like trauma from growing up in that religion. Yeah. Eventually she did get over it. And so my mom kind of saw that Islam, like, can overnight become very dangerous. And that's why after my brother was born and my dad keep making trips to Egypt and they were talking about if my dad dies, then the family would take custody because my mom's not a Muslim. That's when she's like, she had a hint of what Islam could do. So she went overnight and became a quote unquote Muslim.
That's so interesting.
So no one can take the kids and then no one can say she's not a Muslim. And my family kind of knew. Like, they knew, like, my Egyptian family, like, one of my uncles even said, like, so why did you convert? And my mom was like, you know why I converted. And he's like, I know, and I'm sorry. he's like, I'm sorry this is happening. He was a great guy. He's like, I'm sorry this is the country that you, like, I know, it sucks. Like even they were like, this is very, like, bad memes. So, yeah.
I feel like this happens so much with these mixed faith marriages, so to speak, you know, the husband's Muslim and not religious, and then they have kids or, you know, there's something that happens in their life and all of a sudden they turn the switch and they become religious overnight. So that must have been very jarring for your mother.
Yeah, especially growing up with her mom being so indoctrinated by the JW religion.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy.
So when she converted, in the beginning, it was a superficial conversion. Did she ever eventually take it seriously?
Nope. Not till today. Nothing. She says, and I quote, every organized religion is nonsense. she knows. She's like, nah, this is all stupid. Like,
I like your mom. So what does your mom think? Kind of jumping ahead in the story here. But what does she think about you being Christian then?
She thinks it's just as bad, though. Like, she's like, she just wants people to be normal. She's like, just don't be religious. Like, believe in God, sure, but just like, stop being weird. That's kind of like my mom.
I like your mom, but like, do you find ever since you you converted, maybe we're jumping ahead here. I'm curious though. Like, do you find that like being Christian is like helping you in your life? Like, you find meaning in it and like community and
oh yeah,
that's probably why. you like being Christian, right? Like, there's benefits to you. Your mom doesn't see that, though, because she's traumatized from the whole Jehovah's Witness thing.
Well, when I had my conversion and she found out, she was so petrified that I joined a cult.
Oh.
She was so scared that, like, even my friends from high school who, like, knew me, and because before becoming Christian, I left Islam and became, like, an atheist. And they knew me in high school as being an atheist. And they were like, we have to check on Ishmael. So they literally came to my church and they started asking, like, the priest questions. And they're like, did you guys, like, do something? Like, what's going on? Like, why is Ishmael, like, acting weird? So even sweet. Everyone was, it was out of, like, love. They were actually,
yeah, concerned. That's cute.
So I actually, nice. I have nothing against them. And my mom kind of had the same feeling too. She was very worried I joined a cult.
To be honest, though, like, to be fair, like, to your mom, like, being a Jehovah Witness, like, I do literally see that as a cult. Because of the whole, like, I mean, I used to read about it, like, off and on, and I learned about, like, the whole blood transfusion thing. There's a lot, and the Watchtower. I remember, you know, growing up that people used to knock on our door and they would leave, like, the Watchtower flyers and all of that stuff. And when I went to India many years ago, with college, the girl that I stayed with, she was a Jehovah Witness, and that's, I learned some of the stuff about blood transfusions. I asked her and she was like, yeah, pretty much, like, we don't accept that, you know, you would die. And I'm just like, okay, that's a cult.
I think worse
than that, if a religion, like, puts someone's life at risk, then, like, there's some cult stuff to it,
honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, the whole shunning your family, cutting you off, and that's very cult-like too. And that happens with Islam to some extent, depending on what sort of Muslim community you're in. I was like shunned by the community. I mean, it's a little bit different because I started talking about Islam publicly, and like, so it wasn't just that I wasn't just shunned because I left it. They wanted me back, but then when I'm like, nah, I'm gonna just like explain why I left it, and then I got shunned, and so yeah, that is another cult, excuse me, cult-like behavior. Not everyone's like that in the Muslim community, but yeah, I think having the religion officially, like, cut you off when you leave it, that's awful and sad. Yeah
And then, like, the only one in modern times that has a death penalty is Islam.
Yeah,
so, like, I'll give the right. JW's dad, at least they don't kill
you. Rather be shunned than killed.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, and just quickly call out Kero Abibi, thank you for your super chat. Thanks, you. Mr. and Mrs. Stanley X Muslim. I really enjoy your content, your humor, your compassion towards others. Thanks for bringing on a smile. Aww. So we have a fan. And also, one more thing he said is, he or she, according to Stephen Husson's bite model, JW's other cult, hence the shunning. Yeah, the bite model is a great way of, like, objectively defining what means to be a cult rather than just using the word. And I really like that model. I think it works well. I spoke to another, I think he was ex-Mormon. Well, ex Jehovah's Witness that mentioned this bite model to me and how it applies. So yeah, that's a good model.
Mormonism too, yeah.
Yeah, there's two different extents. Okay, so going back to your story, and so your mom's not religious, but she converted, and you guys were, your dad was concerned about your lack of schooling, Islamic schooling, and so he moved you guys to all the Egypt. Way to Egypt from Canada? That's kind of crazy because that's like reverse immigration. Like, everyone wants to come here, and he's like, nah, I'm gonna go back to Egypt. Like, I've been to Egypt and I didn't like it there. It's like,
dude, it kind of sucks, to be honest. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, it's like, people are like, oh, you should be proud of where you're from. I'm like, I don't know, like, every time I go to, like, Pakistan or Egypt or, like, India, like, there's a reason why we're all here. There's a reason why my dad immigrated here. There's a reason why you guys live in Toronto. Like, come on. There's a reason. And, I mean, so we moved back to Egypt. My dad does it because he wants us to learn Arabic. He wants us to learn the Quran. But my mom kind of does, like, this, like, halfway thing where it's like, okay, send them to an American school in Egypt. So at least they get, like, a Western education. But also you can teach them the Quran in Arabic. So they kind of agree on both of that. So I ended up going to an American school there. And I kind of lived between two worlds. So my teachers and the principals and all that were Americans or Westerners, whether they be British, Canadian, American. And the students were mixed from different places in the Middle East, Egypt, Morocco, like Lebanese. And you could see a division just from the kids and the teachers. The teachers were all like Western, They all had like Western values. They all believed in human rights. And the kids, like, I'll never forget this. When in the United States, when gay marriage became legal nationwide, I remember like the division was so clear in that school. Mm-hmm. Like the kids were like talking about like, oh, isn't it so disgusting? Imagine having sex with a man. That's why we have to kill them all. And I'm like, okay. Then you look at the teachers and they're like, man, it's about time that the United States gets like more liberal. And I'm like, you guys are teaching in the same classroom? Like, is this the same, is it the same place that's going on? So the two worlds really collided in that school because it was a mix of like Western culture and Egyptian.
Mm. So and it was expensive. Weird too,
because
yep, go ahead.
What's that?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say it was weird too because our curriculum was based on the Virginia standard. So whatever they were taught in the state of Virginia was being taught to us, which was so weird. Because even as a Canadian, I don't know anything about Canadian history, but I can name exactly what happened.
Trader.
Louisiana Purchase. Like, I can tell you everything. Like, they were literally growing like American patriots in the Civil War.
That's funny because my wife is American.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm American. My daughter is American, obviously, but she's here, you know, in Canadian school, so it's kind of happening to her too.
in reverse.
Yeah, in reverse. Yeah. So yeah. How old were you when you went to this school, and how old were you? Like, did you graduate from high school there? What did that look like? When did your dad take you guys to Egypt to go to school?
I was 5 to 15. So this was like 10 years of my life.
Interesting.
And it was weird because I come back to Canada. I was always I wasn't an Egyptian citizen. So I had to always go back to Canada every like 10 months because of like some legal thing.
They didn't get summer. You officially immigrated. It was just a tourist visa.
Yeah, basically, kind of. Yeah. Like I was like literally opposite immigration, like you said. Like we're trying to get into Egypt to learn Arabic, but yeah. I wasn't Egyptian, so I had to keep leaving.
Oh my goodness.
So interesting. Which is crazy. And like, so I kind of lived between these two worlds and they always kept colliding. And it really collided when I started becoming more religious. So at the age of like 13, 14, I found myself believing more and more in Islam. Probably like because there was all these questions rising up, like ISIS became a thing. And then Al-Qaeda just happened like 5 years before that. And there's all these questions about what is Islam actually teaching? So I started researching into it. And it made me angry with the world. I was under this impression that the Western world, especially the United States, was like the Roman Empire. And we were like the freedom fighters fighting against the Roman Empire. And like, this is a thing that Muslims believe till today. Like that,
some
like,
of them, yeah.
Yeah, like the Western world is kind of like an extension of like pagan Rome. And we are the true monotheists who have to like take it back by any means necessary. And I kind of fell into this, and I was like, I would just look at the injustice, like the Iraq war or what's happening in different countries in the Middle East or North Africa. And it's true, there is injustice there, but violence never begets violence. Like, or violence always begets violence, I mean. Like, if I act violently towards it, again, it's just going to keep the war going forever and ever. And I just found myself that, like, Islam kind of gave me an out to give out my frustrations with the world. Where I'll come to Canada, people are complaining about homelessness in Canada, and I'm like, you have no idea what homelessness is. Like, compared to the Middle East, you have no idea what it means to be homeless in Egypt compared to Canada. Like, obviously there's people who's homeless here, but there's shelters here, there's places you can go to, there's unemployment. In Egypt, if you're born homeless, you die homeless. So I saw these things, and I was like, there's so much injustice, and Islam became this thing where I can use it to forward justice in the world. And I believed in it. And then around 15, basically what happened was I found myself having to leave Egypt for Canada again because my brother graduated high school. He's 3 years older than me. My dad retired and we were like, Halifax is way more peaceful. The Middle East is falling apart. We should all just go back to Halifax. So we do, and I go to high school here. And I was in shock by the quote-unquote immorality that I saw. That people didn't believe in God. That confused me so much. That, like, people, like, how can you not, like, everyone around me, at least in public in Egypt believed in God. Because you're not, no one's going to go out around saying you're atheist or agnostic or whatever.
Yeah.
But here people are like, yeah, I just don't believe in God because of science and evolution and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay. And then I'll meet someone else and like they'll have like a mixed family. It's like my dad's ethnically Jewish and like, I don't know, my mom was a Christian, but I'm kind of agnostic. And these things just didn't exist for me until I came to Canada. And that's when I was like, okay, I have to really research what I believe and really find out what I believe. And that was probably the biggest mistake I could have done if I wanted to remain a Muslim. It's because I literally took the Hadith in the Sira, which is the biography of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
I read it in Arabic. And I began at the beginning of the week. And by the time the end of the week happened, I left Islam. Literally, wow. That's all it took. I literally read it and I was like, this guy allowed like sex slavery,
mm-hmm.
married a minor, tortured people. And he's the best of mankind that I'm supposed to like follow for eternity. And as a 16-year-old, because now I'm 16 and still in high school, I realized that I had more morals than this man.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could never kill someone just for leaving their religion.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it. I couldn't kill anyone. I could barely even like if I see a dog die on the street, I feel bad. Let alone to kill people. Like it just didn't make any logical sense to me. And I found myself rejecting it completely, and I became pretty agnostic about everything. I just like I'm not gonna look at other religions. So that's basically how I left it. I left it because of Muhammad's life and what he did.
So your religious education that you received in Egypt from your dad, you never learned any of this until you started to read about it for yourself.
I learned that Muhammad, he like didn't like slavery, apparently. That's not true. They always quoted the one where, like, Muhammad saw a cat and it was thirsty. So Muhammad
like,
it was,
yeah.
Like, those ones.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. There were weird tales, too. There was one where, like there was a tree. I'm sorry. This is the funniest one. There was a tree.
Go ahead.
And Muhammad was leaning on it. And when he left, the tree started crying. And I was like, even as a kid, I was like, bruh, like, what? Like, what?
So you were fed a very sanitized version of who Muhammad was, right?
Exactly.
Right? And that's most Muslims, right? Like, they wouldn't teach them these horrifying things in Islamic school or all these Islamic kid books. Like, they're not going to put all these horrifying, awful things about Muhammad in there. It's not, yeah, Muhammad's literally. Not a kid-friendly person. Literally, he's not kid-friendly.
No, he's not, yeah.
That's so interesting.
It was crazy, because I know about, like, David Wood. Like,
yeah.
Even when I was a kid, I knew who he was, and I could hear him talk about it.
Oh.
But I was just like, oh, he must be lying, you know. Then there'll be, like, a sheikh on YouTube being like, but he misquoted. He doesn't know Arabic. And I was like, oh, he doesn't know Arabic. which is like not an argument for me because I just read it in Arabic.
Bro, yeah,
it's actually,
yeah.
It's worse. It's worse in Arabic. It's actually really bad. Like, it's not, the stuff that's written in Arabic is insane.
Yeah.
So if you want to make a better religion, don't tell them to translate it. Like keep it in English. don't look at the original.
Yeah, you were saying these things don't exist. And, you know, when you're talking about like the mix, the different beliefs, which is why I think that, you know, many Muslims, they haven't been exposed to this critical thinking, and this just exposure to like non-Muslims is actually a good thing, because you get to see and many Muslims, they come here and they have empathy. And they start to realize like, these people are all going to go to hell. And then they start to think and they're like, does this make sense? And it actually makes you question, right? Rather than being in a culture, like if you grow up in Saudi, you're probably, you know, and they have to use VPNs to get certain access to certain things. It's hard to see outside of the bubble of Islam, right?
You guys give me 1 minute. I just got to do something quickly.
Yeah. Sure.
I'll be right back.
Yep. All right. So while Ismail's away, let's just go to some of the comments. And I'm going to share this one right here. Fernway says the tree didn't want to be touched by Muhammad. Admon Thomas says this is common in Egypt and Muslim countries in general. About, I think they're referring to like the whole lack of knowing all the details about Muhammad, right?
Yeah, it's yeah.
This one, Syed Mamdou is Egyptian, and he says if you're born in homeless in Egypt, you die homeless. That hit me hard. And he said, I'm from Egypt and I feel homelessness.
Wow. Yeah, I've read that a big portion of the population lives in poverty over there. And you know that you went over there, Abdullah. So
Yeah. I was surprised in Egypt when I saw some of the like the situation that you live in. Over here, everyone has buildings with elevators. Over there, they turn off the elevators from like basically when people want to use it. So like 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. when people are going to school, they turn it off. And the reason is they want to limit the use of it. And when I was moving out from Egypt as well, we had like a bunch of like suitcases, and the I was going to say imam, the sheikh that owned the building, he's like, you can't use the elevator. You have to carry the bags by hand down the stairs. I actually lost a lot of weight being in Egypt. We were in by the way, so I went to Egypt before. I was there for like 6 months, and this was in, I forget when it was, 20, it was like a while ago. Anyways, but we stayed there for a while, and I lost quite a bit of weight. I was in Miami in Alexandria, so I have a bit of exposure. Yeah. I took like a mini vacation. I actually quit my job, and I used my savings and just decided to go for like a mini break, and yeah, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Egypt's great for like the people are very humble, but like the government sucks, the economy sucks, everyone's poor. Like it's just, it's really a shame that people live in those conditions.
Yeah, everyone tries to scam you too. They think you're from the West. They like charge you double.
Yeah, people do anything for money there. They'll literally do anything.
And we just got a super chat. Thank you for the super chat. RS for Christ Jesus says, I appreciate you both. Thank you for sharing everything. Love your guest also. Oh, another fan.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. God bless you for sharing everything. Love your guest also. God bless you. Okay, yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. All right. So, yeah, getting back to your story. I don't remember where did we leave off.
We were talking about how he learned about Muhammad. He was reading So I think the question I wanted to ask when you started this journey about reading into Islam and what it actually teaches and everything like that. Did you have any periods where like there's this push and pull? Like with me, it's like when I started to read this and, you know, read into Islam and learn more and expose myself to, you know, who Muhammad was, what the Quran really says, things like this, like I kind of felt guilt. So I kind of like pull away and be like, no, I have to, you know, I have to try to believe these people aren't telling the truth. People like David Wood, you know, everything I expose myself to. And then I would go back to, well, I don't know if I believe this. And do you oscillate between that? Like belief, disbelief, like feeling guilty?
No, like, okay. I just like, I don't know, because it's either true or it's not true. There's no middle ground. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, there can be ideas or concepts in it that are true. But there is a claim in Islam that God, first of all, God exists. He sent down messengers. Angels came down and talked to these messengers. And that whatever the last one did, Muhammad did, it is immoral. You know, basically, right? Yeah. That's the claim. So we have to go through these claims, no matter what philosophy around it might be good or bad, that there's claims to this. And I don't believe morality is subjective. I think that deep down, like whether you believe it from it, like a religious perspective, or you believe it just evolutionarily, we have grown as a species to know some things are better than others for our own species. Like, why do most people feel disgusted when they think about, I wouldn't even say it like on YouTube, but PDF people. Like, why do we feel disgusted about that? Well, evolutionarily, we know they're innocent. We know they can't defend themselves. We know that it traumatizes people for their whole life. So there's something ingrained through the way we were raised, whether it be like for 1,000 years. I don't know what happened, but over time, we know deep down this is wrong. Okay. If we all know deep down this is wrong, and this person's coming, and he's living these things out, and we have to convince ourselves now that this thing that we know is wrong is right, this can't be moral. Mm-hmm. If anything, we're actually going down. We're not going up. And that's what I saw with Islam was, it was making me less moral. Mm-hmm. I was less of a moral person the more I tried to practice it. I was more hateful. I saw people differently. I saw women differently. Women were not viewed as equals. And the more I tried to practice Islam, the less I viewed women. But then I'd have like my mom, or have like friends that I had that are just women. And I'm like, these shouldn't be less than me. They're just, they're human beings. Like,
stuck
like,
for love, brother. You had to, I know, right? Friends, not allowed.
How dare you? How dare you? And that's what it was. It was like the moral compass was so off. And I was like, okay, you don't have to think that your gay neighbors are doing something good or bad, but you can live in peace. Like, why do you have to go, like, are you really going to go over there because they had gay sex and killed them? Like, really? This is the morality that we're talking about? Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like stupid things like that.
Yeah.
And then it shocked me too. It shocked me too because, again, in then high school, when gay marriage became legal throughout the whole United States, people in this secular school in Egypt, like probably one of the best schools in the Middle East, would say things like, oh, well, you know, they kind of deserve to be like thrown off buildings because Muhammad said so. And I'm like, if this is what you're saying, I don't want to know what the public schools in Egypt are saying. Like, I don't really want to know. Like, I want to no idea what they're talking about. Like, those things really shocked me. So, like, I had no other choice but to be truthful to myself and be like, this is wrong. I'm going to leave it.
Yeah. There, you know, with the whole Aisha thing, Muhammad thing, like, historically, like, children weren't viewed as children, which is, you know, why they married them. And they didn't understand back then, like, oh, she got her period, therefore she's ready to, you know, consummate the marriage. But, you know, obviously, like, with kids, you know, getting pregnant, giving birth, like, they die, right? Like, they didn't have, it's just, and then you would read in the sources, like, or you would read online, people would say, oh, she was 18, she was this age, she wasn't six. I mean, you always come back to, that's just not true. She was 6 years old when she got married. She was 9 when the marriage was consummated. It's right there in a Sahih Hadith, right? And it's like me having a daughter as she started to, you know, get bigger. She's 7 now. It's like, technically speaking, in Islam, my daughter could be married right now. And it's like, how can I believe in a prophet that married a 6-year-old girl like my daughter, right? Like, that could be my daughter easily. Like, when I started to envision like my own child in these situations, it's just, you can't believe, you get so disgusted by it. Like, that's not morality.
Yeah. Even worse just to say one thing, even worse than even worse than Muhammad marrying a 6-year-old is the fact that it's become like this acceptable thing forever because of what he did. That's even worse than the fact, because we have lots of people that in the past that did some awful things, but we just call them out. And that's another thing that's different between Christianity and Islam, where with Islam, and by the way, someone's asking, did you guys become Christian? No, I'm still atheist. just like having these conversations. Difference between Christianity and Islam is, in Christianity, the prophets did mistakes and they're considered like the fallible. Whereas in Islam, whereas in Islam, Muhammad, every single thing he did is now like the moral standard forever and ever. And so if he did this, basically anyone can do this and there'll be nothing wrong with them doing this. And It's like you were saying when you talked about how the things in Arabic are even worse. There used to be this YouTuber. He's still out there. He just doesn't upload YouTube videos anymore. And he used to make videos in Arabic and English, the masked Arab. And he showed like some of the quotes of Egypt. Many of them were from Egyptian media, where these guys, the sheikhs, are like arguing about the minimum age of marriage. And they were like, some of them were saying there's no age, there's no minimum. Or some of them were saying it's like 6. And it's like, it's even worse in those, in the Arabic countries than it is in the English speaking countries. Because in English speaking countries, I think what's happened is the values of the society have kind of taken over the Muslim community to some extent. And so there's this embarrassment about saying these things in public. And even embarrassment's part of it. And part of it, I think, is there's also like a bit of a revulsion. And so what happens is you have this movement of Muslims, you have the Hakika Jews and those Delhi Dawas and those people that are trying to pull us back into the dark ages. But then you have like modern Muslims that they haven't left the faith, but they don't want to admit that she was 9. So they'll say she's 19 and they'll look for these obscure ways to like get out of jail by saying that Huda, you sent me a video today about polygamy. That was funny.
She was saying, what did that girl in the TikTok say, that it, polygamy was never meant for men to like have multiple women or variety? Was that
it was meant for men.
Yeah, it's for widows and divorced women. I'm like, yeah, right. Come on.
It's like, you know, was Aisha
divorced or widow? No, she wasn't. And Safiya was a widow once he killed her husband.
Divorced at 6 years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Muslims might say that she was the exception. See?
And they justify.
So there's exceptions to the rule.
They justify too. Oh, she was a scholar. She was this and that. You know, that's also how they try to spin it and make it sound like it was a good thing he married her. And yeah. But children can't consent. That's the whole thing. Children can't consent. Even there's the hadith of her mother coming to fetch her to go get married to Muhammad, and she was on the swings and she had no idea why her mom was coming to get her. Like, clearly she never consented to that.
Mm-hmm. She was playing with dolls too, which is forbidden in Islam.
Yeah.
Like, literally there was a rule made just for her because she was young enough to play with dolls. But if she was older than 6 or 9, they would have taken the dolls away because it's idolatry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like the own sources kind of claim that like she was too young. And this is, you know what's crazy? There's even a hadith that says that someone wanted to marry Fatima when she was 12 and Muhammad said she was too young.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that.
Like, bruh. I don't know what to say, man. Like,
it's the religion of contradiction, right?
Mm-hmm. Literally.
So, what were the things? I mean, you did kind of talk a little bit about it, but what were the things specifically that caused you to doubt? You, I mean, you said you read everything in a week, so you were reading in Arabic, like the Hadith and the Quran and stuff, and then you were like, "Oh, this is it. This is it for me. Yeah. I'm done." Like, what was it specifically that you came up with? Did you try to talk to anyone about it? Oh, you just felt like I was convinced.
The one that like really got to me was the Ma Malakat Aymanukum, the right hand possessions. That one, I don't know what it was about it, but the fact that you go to war, you kill these people's husbands or take them for captives, and then the same day you force people to do them.
Yeah.
And like something about that, like even as a 16-year-old horny boy that I was. I knew that was disgusting. Like, I knew that doing that against someone's will was just wrong in every way, shape, or form. There's no argument about it. And I reached out to Ali Dawa. I sent him a message. And I was like, hey, brother, I don't know what to do with this. And there was another video that came out at the same time by his name was Converted to Islam. And they put it Deconverted to Islam.
Ah, I remember that guy.
The ginger guy.
Yeah. We were just talking about him in another interview with Ellie. Yeah.
And he's great. Like, that video came out at the same time I was questioning it in that week. And I was like, this is like insane. It's what a coincidence. So he's reading it to me in Arabic. I look it up in Arabic. The hadith and the tafsir are saying it. And I'm like, okay, I have to ask someone. I'm not going to ask my dad because if my dad thinks I'm leaving Islam, it's going to be a whole 9 yards. I'm going to ask someone who's knowledgeable. And for some reason, I thought that was Ali Dawa. So I messaged him on Facebook and I was like, hey, man, like, can you tell me what this is about? Like, I'm confused. There's this video going around about this. And he said, I wish I saved the message. But this is like years ago, almost 10 years ago now. He said, I'm going to make a video next week about this and I'll get back to you. He never made the video, never got back to me. I don't know what happened. I never heard from him again. And of course, if he sees this, he'll be like, yeah, I don't know who this guy is. Like, maybe he doesn't remember. I don't know. He gets messages all the time. But like, that answered it for me. I knew why he didn't answer. Because he knew it was true. Mm-hmm. Like, he couldn't say what he's going to say. Yeah, like it's true.
He doesn't want to leave a receipt either. Like, of explaining that he's gonna make a video, he's gonna twist it. Well, not really twist, he's gonna be truthful about it, but
we're proud. I think of it.
He's proud of it. Yeah. I mean, this is the same guy who said if his daughter was 9 and menstruating and she was ready for marriage, he would marry her off, right? Is that the age he said?
Mm-hmm.
Abdullah?
Yes.
Yeah, he said something like that in one of his interviews in Speaker's Corner. I kind of don't believe him, to be honest. I think he's a liar there, and I think he's saying that because he's been cornered. And the reason I say that is because I think too highly of human beings in general, and especially someone that's living in the UK. I don't know if he's that brainwashed he would actually do that.
I think he would.
I'd
people would do crazy things, man.
I'm being more charitable here. But yeah, either way, he did say that in public. And Ismail, you actually reached out to someone else too. You reached out to the Mahdi. Tell us about that. I saw your videos.
The Mahdi, bro.
He's calling the Christians and the Muslims to follow him. So what happened then? That was funny.
I called to his show like twice. The first time was decent. The second time they were just yelling at me. I just ask him basic questions. I'm like, okay, if you're the Pope, like, where's the lineage? How did you get there? You know, like, even if this stuff isn't true, Christianity is false. Okay, awesome. It's a fairy tale. But in this fairy tale, where are you in the lineage? You know what I mean? Like, how did you get involved in this? And then somehow you have a will from 1,000 years ago that the Sixth Imam had, but he didn't write it down until 400 years after Muhammad. I'm like, what? How did you? And where is this will? Can you show it to us? Like, so everything's just kind of like falling apart. And yeah. I think they got mad on the second call because they knew if I kept calling them, like, people are gonna be like, bro, okay, this guy's just like, they can't even answer the basic questions. Like, so they kind of just like, I don't know. I posted it on my YouTube, not even because I was trying to be charitable. I was like, just tell me what you believe. And I'm sorry, we're obviously in shock because you're trying to combine every religion into one now. And this guy is basically saying he's the supreme pontiff on earth. So yeah. If he is, show us. And I don't know. Apparently, the Mahdi likes beanies or something. I don't know what's going on with that either. But I have nothing against the followers. People have the right to believe what they want. If they want to have their religion, so be it. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, doesn't mean I don't think it's kind of a bra religion.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, this, if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, this Mahdi guy is claiming to be like this Christian, like, he's like, I'm the fulfillment of the prophecy of this and that. And the story gets funnier and funnier the more you look into it. So, but he says it all with a straight face. And I found that so funny when I was looking at your page. I'm like, oh my God, you talked to him. You must feel honored.
I'm so honored, guys. It was weird too. So, like, people, like, some of his followers commented on the videos and they're like, how dare you? The Mahdi honored you by answering your questions. And then you backstabbed him by posting the responses. I'm like, I'm not the one who yelled on live television. Like, I don't know.
Why would they get mad for you posting it? I mean, he's saying it, like, openly.
Because they take down their live streams once they're posted.
Oh.
Like, after, like, a half an hour, they take them down or something.
Oh, you recorded it.
But while I was talking to him on the phone, I recorded it. So that whatever they said, I had the receipts. So that's why I was like, I knew what they were going to do. I was like, nope, I'm putting it right up as soon as they deleted it, I put it right up. Yeah.
They take down their lives? Like, how are they going to spread their message?
Like... Well, it's not controlled. So, you know, like, the message has to be controlled. I have a theory about the Mahdi guy. I can't believe I'm saying this, and I might be wrong. I think it's an advanced AI. And the reason why I came to this conclusion is because, have you ever seen this man not in those positions, either standing up or sitting down? And he always speaks in the same manner, same monotone voice. I don't even think he blinks. And I'm like, this just might be an advanced AI. Like, I'm like, I think it must be a prank. Like, it can't be. Like, I think there's a real person and they copy him and put it into an AI. And that's what's happening. That's my theory. Like,
he's a hologram Mahdi.
Yeah, literally.
So, speaking about a little bit of a different topic, another thing I found kind of crazy that happened to you, I don't know why these things happened to you specifically, but Central Dawa, the same guy that threatened to, like, cut off Apostate Prophet's head, he faked your voice and he made an AI video of him debating you. Tell us what happened there.
So I was out with some friends and I was having a few beers, and before I knew it, I was looking at, like, my messages, seeing, because, like, I get, like, 1,000 of them a day now, apparently. And then I see one, and it's from this, like, Muslim name. And he's like, I knew you were false. That's all I could see. And I was like, okay. I click on it. And he sends me this video of, I didn't even know who he was. I had no idea who Central Dawa was, but of him debating me. And I'm like, did I talk to him? I don't remember talking to him. So I click on it, and I listen to it at the bar, and I'm like, that's not even my voice. So I show it to my friends around the room. Like, guys, have you seen this? Like, they're making AIs about me now. I think I made it. And then it's crazy. So I make a response video and I answer the questions that he gives to me, quote unquote, in Arabic. I answered him perfectly. And then I message him like, hey, man, if you want to actually have a discussion, you can. Like, and then he goes on the defense and he's like, I'm not taking down the video because I thought it was you, but now I know it's not you, but I'm still not taking it down. I'm like, but wouldn't you take it down if you now know it's not me? But I don't know what happened after that. He was just like, no, I'm not taking it down, and I'm going to challenge you for a debate. And then my friend, another YouTuber, Sips with Sarah, he posted about it and talked about it, and then he challenged him for a debate. And we're just like, bro, we're not going to debate you if you're just going to lie about people. And then after that, he posted two other fake ones. Like, kept going.
With you again?
With me. Oh my goodness. But this one was like AI. So it's like just like an AI picture of some guy with the same shirt I was wearing and glasses.
Yeah.
And like kind of looked like me. And I was like, All right, this is not even worth my time anymore.
How desperate do you have to be? Like this just goes to show how desperate they are that they have to create this type of content and like fake, like a fake version of you. And they could have just talked to you. Like, but I guess they don't want to. Yeah.
They're not going to. And the reason why is because I know Arabic.
Yeah.
There's no lying anymore. Just like, I was talking to Aspiring Philosophy yesterday, and in that stream, apparently someone told him Yarqubun means to come close. So there's this like hadith where apparently the jinn like ride Muhammad.
Oh,
this is what the hadith says.
The Zut one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, again, that's what it says. I'm not saying anything bad about him. That's what your thing says. And someone told him that the word in Arabic, Yarqubun, means to be close to in slang. It doesn't actually mean to ride. And I didn't even know anything about this. So he asked me, like, hey, what does the word Yarqubun mean? That means to ride. He's like, what could it be slang for being close? And I'm like, no. And he's just like, and then he's like, oh, so like if someone says in this verse here, like that this means that the genies were close to him. And I just say, like, I'll give you this. That word is used when you ride a horse. So like, the genies are riding him like how someone rides a horse. So because I know the language, I don't think they're going to talk to me.
No.
Because I can just point out when they're lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they can't do that with, like, other people because they're only speaking English. But I thought it was hilarious someone told them that word doesn't mean ride. Because it's like saying in English that, like, the word carpet doesn't mean carpet. It means apartment building. Like, what?
Yeah,
it means it's like, it's so ridiculous.
Oh, another analogy is the hitting, like in 434 of the Quran, right? Mm-hmm. They could, like, you could say hit the road or something. It could be used in that context, but in the context of the Quran, it's talking about hitting your wife. It's not talking about hitting the road or, you know, let's hit it or something. Like, it's.
And we still use it today in Arabic. Adrab means to hit something. Like, I want to smack you in the face. That's literally what it means. Like, so I don't know. Like, and there's no light in it. The only times that word's used is when you want to punch someone in the face or you want to hit Israel with missiles. So there you go.
You know, I think too, if I had to guess why else they don't want to actually have a conversation with you and just want to create an AI conversation with you and say that's, you know, they talk to you, I get this like vibe from you that you're just a very you're a very reasonable person, you're very composed, and they rely very heavily upon like insults, you know, things like that to kind of break you. And I don't think you're susceptible to that either. There's that, and there's the Arabic component, which is why they would probably want to run away from you. But like, I get a vibe like from your personality too. You know, they're not going to break you like they can break other people, you know? Remember,
they make fun of me because like I have glaucoma in my eyes and stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool, man. Like, I don't, that's your argument. Like, your argument is I have a disability. Awesome. And I feel great.
That's what they do. Like that's what they do. They try and, you know, pick out something about you like that and just make fun of you for it. But if you were still a Muslim, you know, they would obviously defend you. But, you know, they have, but since you left, you know, that's what they focus on. They're so scummy like that.
Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
So I'm curious. So you read more into Islam, Muhammad, his life, who he really was, everything, and then you left. So then how long between that period of leaving Islam versus finding Christianity and converting, like what did that look like? How did that story go?
It was a period of 2 years. And throughout this whole journey, Christianity was always like sweeping in. Like a lot of the teachers at the school in Egypt were secret missionaries, and people were like having hidden conversions. And then even in Canada, I found that a lot of people, and this is not, I'm not generalizing people by group, this is what I witnessed, that a lot of like, especially like Reddit atheism was very toxic. It was very much like, oh, you believe in Sky Daddy, you're not intelligent. And I'm like, guys, like, you're not going to win anyone over by this. Like, no one's going to be convinced that there's no God by you being an a-hole. So yeah. That's kind of like, that's how like I saw atheism. And me being an atheist, I just wasn't like that. I was very anti-religion for some points because of what I witnessed. But every time I met Christians, they, like, from my personal experience, like, they weren't really anti-me. They were just like, oh, I understand why you believe what you believe. Thank you. And that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the atheists were more aggressive for some reason and almost went out of their way to make people's feelings hurt for being religious. And again, this is not all atheists at all. But I saw that, like, high school atheism, that's the best way I can explain it, like, it was kind of just, like, very toxic. And I didn't want to be too much a part of it. And I thought it was very, like, lack of purpose, too. And my best friend's an atheist. He doesn't have a lack of purpose in his life. He has a good life. He has a good job. And he's working to be a doctor now. He's a great person. And he has a purpose in his life. But these atheists I was talking to were people, like, in the basement of their mom's bedrooms and, like, kind of just, like, smoking weed. And it's like, bro, the government needs to give me money. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't. Like, I just, like, bro, like, you're no wonder no one wants to, like, think you're smart. Like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, that was the vibe. And the Christians were being nice to me. And every time I met a Christian, they actually seemed to always want to have the best intentions for me.
Yeah.
And then I go into university. And I go into university as someone who thinks religion's a scam and that everyone who's religious is absolutely insane. I'm basically smoking weed every day and drinking alcohol like there's no tomorrow. And I think I'm the smartest person in the world because I found the truth that there's no God. Therefore, I'm going to demolish everyone. And I find this little place in university called the chaplaincy. I didn't know what the chaplaincy was. I thought it was like someone's name. Like, I thought it was like, you know, like, buildings are named after people. That's how little I knew about Christianity. But apparently a chapel is like a small church. So I was like, okay, I found that out. And I walk in, I see like crucifixes everywhere and people are being nice. They're playing like board games. And I just like, I feel bad for doing this, but like the whole first semester of my university, I went back and I was just absolutely mean to them over and over and over. And what upset me was, regardless of how much of an asshole I was to them, they were very nice to me, which made me more upset. Like, it made me more angry. I was like, why are you being nice to me? I just said that you believe in nothing and everything you do is worthless. And he's like, yeah, but we still love you. And I'm like, okay. And they kept giving me like free food and they kept like talking to me. They were just nice people. They just didn't be normal people.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I kind of fell in love with these people. They kind of became my friends, honestly, because they kind of treated me better than the Muslims did, than like other groups did, than other societies did. They welcomed me in and they didn't really force their religion on me at all. They really didn't. They were very like, hey, do you want to go to church? No, I'm okay. Okay. That was it. It was very, and that's not most people's interaction with Christianity, especially some places in like the South or in different countries. But, and I kind of don't like that. Like when I went down to the South when I was in, I think I was in Florida, and I saw all these signs about Christianity and the radio was just bashing Christianity in your face. And even as a Christian, I was like, it would be kind of sucky if you like were an atheist kid and you're being dragged into the car with a Christian radio and then going to a church and then your mom, like you couldn't even tell your parents the truth. Like, I don't want my kids to come up to me and be like, hey, I don't want to be a Christian. And they're scared to tell me. That's actually one of my biggest fears. Like, I want my kids to actually believe what they believe. And I want them to know that they can choose whatever they want to choose in life. And honestly, I've thought about it too. Like, if my children choose to become Muslim, that would hurt a lot just because of my personal experiences. But I would still love them. They'll always be my kid. They'll always welcome home. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's some things that surpass those types of concepts.
That's kind of how I feel about my daughter as well, you know, because her father was Arab and I converted and left. And that is, you know, something I really, you know, don't want to happen with her. But if she did, you know, I'm not going to love her any less or, you know, it's the same concept. But I do think in general, because I grew up like a cultural Christian, right? I was Lutheran, went to Sunday school sometimes. I went to confirmation. And I also have a lot of great memories. When I compare the church to the mosque, I have a lot of great memories of the church growing up as opposed to the mosque. And it's interesting because, you know, I just kind of thought, I don't know, Christianity was kind of like, it was like empty for me. There wasn't really much. I just felt like there wasn't anything there for me. So I got interested in Islam. But if I had to compare, like what you're saying, how Christians were nice to you, if I had to compare my experiences in the church versus the mosque, Christians were way more welcoming. And like you said, like they ask you to go to church, you say no, they're like, okay, there's none of this. I don't know. It's just the Muslim experience is so different. It's different when you doubt. It's different when you leave. It's just, I don't know, it's much more aggressive than the than how Christians behave in a lot of ways. So I would agree with you on that.
I'll go first.
I was just gonna say, like, I've been in a church once or twice and I did find it really different than like a mosque. Just the whole like vibe of like women being hidden and like not being allowed to be seen, or like sometimes depending on the mosque, like some of them are like the women's areas are really, really bad. Some of them they're like decent. Some of them they're like they don't even have access to see the imam. It's to a TV or something, right? So
yeah. I've experienced that. You know what else? This is something I just thought of too. And Ish, you might have felt this way too. The mosque is so much different than the church in the sense that it's like with the mosque, they're kind of like isolated in a way. Like they might have like where I live, they might have like an open house once a year, but like churches will have like craft bazaars. They have all kinds of events there. Like mosques don't kind of like welcome outsiders in that same sense. To a degree they do, maybe like an open house, but they don't have bake sales. They don't have these community types of events where like everybody's welcome. Do you ever think about that?
I definitely do. And one thing that always struck me too, even living in Egypt, because in the area where I lived was very like Coptic and I could hear their prayers. And the difference was at the mosque, they only prayed for the Muslims. At the church, they prayed for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, they also prayed against the non-Muslims in the mosque.
Dude, yeah, they did. They were like, curse the Jews and the Christians. I'm like, meanwhile, I have my window open and I hear the church and they're like, oh, God, please send down the love to everyone and our Muslim neighbors. And I'm like, the vibe's very different. Regardless of them being right or wrong, that's very different.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that it's a very different vibe. And it's like, that's what I witnessed. I that was my experience of Christianity. And I started reading like the Bible. I started reading Jesus's life according to the New Testament. And I started reading what the early Christians believed. And I kind of, and we can disagree on this, but from my personal perspective, historically, I started believing it was true. Mm-hmm. I started believing that the claim that like Christ died and rose from the dead, that it was probably true, because the other theories behind what happened in first century Judea didn't make much sense to me. And again, that's like, obviously we can agree, disagree, and we can, it's a whole longer discussion, but that was my conclusion to what my research was, not just from the New Testament, from like the writings of the Romans and the Jews and like the early Christians. And so I started believing it in like my head, but I didn't really change my actions. My actions kind of remained the same. I was still like, I'm very like selfish human being to the extent that like, I just didn't really care what people wanted. It was all about what I wanted until I come to this Thanksgiving dinner that we have. And I get invited as the only non-Christian, which now looking back on it, maybe they were trying to evangelize me. I have no idea, but maybe they just liked me. But they brought me in and they treated me fine. And they were praying over the meal. And they're all beautiful prayers. They're like, God, please help me. Like, my mom has cancer. Like, please, the doctors just be guided in the right way. And, like, you could tell they're very, like, their hearts were in the right place. And I really appreciated that. And then it got to me. I was, like, the last person in the list and the dinner table. And then I didn't know what to say. And I look around the room and they're all looking at me. And I only knew one word. I knew amen. So I was like, aww. Amen. And then they were just like, oh, even the atheist is joining in. So I thought, I was like, it was very nice. And then they treated me very well. And I remember afterwards they were doing like music. They're like praying to God. And that's when it clicked that these people have something I don't have. And I want that. I want to be as nice as them. I want to love people like they're loving people. And I prayed like for the first time in years at this point. I said, Jesus, if you're real, I want to feel this love. And long story short, as I did, in that instant, my life completely changed. I started crying my eyes out and I left the house and people followed me and they're like, are you okay? And I just said, like, I think it's true. Like my posture just changed completely. When I looked around the room now, I loved people just for them being people. Not because they gave me stuff. Not because like I could get something out of my relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But because my entire way of viewing things changed overnight. And I would personally say that was because of Jesus and who he was and what he did for me. And the way now looking at the world from that lens, like I remember like walking home that day, like a few days later, and I lived my mom's house at the time was on a big like hill, and I'm walking up the hill and cars are coming down and I'm smiling like I'm on drugs. I'm like going crazy. And I'm looking at the cars like, I love this person. I love this person. This person is great. Like, I'm like, and then I walk into the house and my mom's like, why are you smiling so much? And I was like, I just love you, mom. And I just started loving you. Like all the hatred, all the hatred that I had from Islam became love. I was like, I don't want to like, and then from like the smallest conflicts to the largest conflicts, like, oh, the neighbors, they hate us. I'm like, oh, I don't know, man. Just invite them over for dinner and then just get over it. Like, aww. I don't know. Or like, any war that's happening in the world is like, they're just people. People just want to live. Let them live. Like, let them have love. And I just became this person overnight that like, and I'm not like a saint or anything. I do stupid things all the time. Like, but my heart posture changed completely. Wow. So to go back to your question where like, did my life become better after I became a Christian? I think everyone's life around me became better too. Because I just, by living out those morals and having that community and again, me personally believing it's true, I found that I was just a better person and I loved people. Where like even interacting with you guys now as a Muslim, I would have been angrier because you guys are atheists. Mm-hmm. But now I'm just like, who cares if they don't believe what I believe? They're people. Yeah. Let them do what they gotta do, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like let everyone's gonna decide what they're doing in their life and they have to come to their own conclusions.
And that's why we like having you on this channel. But that's a really, oh my gosh, I kind of feel emotional hearing your story. Mm-hmm. That's such a beautiful story that you have. Thank you so much. Aw. You know what else? You probably, this is like the most obvious, one of the biggest, most obvious differences between Christianity and Islam. Like from a historical perspective, it's just, I do not believe the Islamic view of Jesus, that, you know, he wasn't crucified, that he was replaced, right? That he was like, just from a historical, like they say that's the most historically accurate part of Jesus's life, that he was crucified, Erdman. Right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Even like the people who are like anti-Christians who think Christianity is the stupidest thing in the world are like, if we know anything about Jesus, is that he died on a cross under Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, Rome, yeah.
By the Romans.
So it's like so whether you're an atheist like my husband or whether you're a Christian like you are, it's like if you're like whatever you believe aside, historically, you know, Jesus died on the cross. Like that's the most accurate part of his life, that he died on the cross. So it's like, well, what does that say about Islam then? Islam's a lie. Right? That's a pretty big lie to make up.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. According to the other thing I found kind of strange about Islam is according to the own belief, if God purposely tricked them, then it's Christianity is his fault. Like he made he was crucified, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
The only reason why I'm Christian is because of Allah. Literally, if Islam is true and like I meet God in the judgment day and he's like, you committed the biggest sin. I'm like, bro, you're the one who did it. You're the guy who deceived the entire world, and you're blaming me? Like
why would Allah create an entire fake religion, aka Christianity, so they can go to hell and then Islam is true? Mm-hmm. Like, why would he do that? That you know, it's just kind of like Occam's razor, right? Like, the most simple explanation is true, and that's kind of mm-hmm. like Jesus was crucified, and that's the most simple explanation. Not all this other, like, Islam takes all these detours to come to their mm-hmm. conclusion, right?
Islam is anything but the truth. And we're going to find out. He didn't do it. Trust me, bro. It didn't happen. I'll tell you why later, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I would say, like, obviously Islam, you know, like, I don't believe that Jesus came back from the dead either. But mm-hmm. at least I think that with Christianity, the story is consistent, and it's the theme is consistent. Whereas with Islam, it's kind of like, why does God do these things? He is born, you know, like, he has some special birth. And then apparently he was crucified, but not crucified, but looks like he was crucified. All of these things that don't really fit in the theology, they're just kind of like imported. Like, they're very clearly like out of place. So that's, mm-hmm. yeah, that's a problem for sure.
So I always ask Muslims that. It's like, why did Jesus was born of a virgin? They're like, Allah wanted it. Okay. why is he sinless? So why not? Allah, he, like, anyone's sinless.
Why not?
I'm like, bro.
Yeah. So, okay. So just, I guess, thanks for doing this. This was great. It was really an enjoyable conversation. Yeah, cool. Where do people find you? Like, if they want to look you up or something, like, and also, what are you doing now? I think you said you're doing talks all over the place. You're actually doing a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah, most of my stuff hasn't come out yet. Like, I've been on like several different podcasts, but they're still like, it takes like a month for them to come out. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working on a book about my deconversion.
Cool.
So I have no idea when that's going to come out. It's like very early stages. So working on that. And then right now I'm just making videos on how to like understand Islam and how like when we interact with Muslims, like all the different like assumptions that Muslims have about the West. That Western people don't even understand. So those are that's kind of like my main focus is like my YouTube stuff now. And so I'm working on a few videos there. And then, yeah, I have Instagram, YouTube. It's all Ish of Arabia. And if anyone wants to donate, it's also PayPal's Ish of Arabia. And yeah.
Awesome.
I'm going to share your link. I did not realize you had a YouTube as well. I knew about Sure, that's kind of obvious, but okay, I'm going to pin the message here and I'll add it to the description after. So Ish of Arabia, it's just youtube.com/@IshofArabia. And so that's the main platform we should find you on now.
Yeah, that and Instagram are the two main ones.
Awesome. Okay, well, just before we end, since we did get a super chat just at the very last second here, just in time super chat. Hi, Ismail, love your story. What's your take on apostasy increasing? And thank you for a super chat, by the way.
My take on it is basically they can't kill all of us. that's literally my take. Like, I remember when I had my deconversion and then I was talking to my mom about this and she was like, you know, you can die if you come public with this. And again, I'm not a saint. I'm a pretty stupid person sometimes. I don't know if it's because, like, again, I'm an idiot or because I have some weird courage. But if I die doing this, it kind of proves them wrong again. Like, if I keep talking, it proves Islam wrong. If they kill me, it proves Islam wrong. Whatever they do, it's going to prove it wrong. And, like, it's not going to look good to the world that I die. Like, you know what I mean? It's not going to be like, they killed the man who left the religion. That's a good one. Good job, guys. Like, it's not going to be, bring good news for them. So, again, I don't want to die. But, like, I'm just saying, like, if this happened, I've kind of come to peace that one day it could come to that. But I'm living in Canada. I'm pretty safe. And then, like, I don't really leave North America most of the time. So, that's kind of been my take is that we need more people to speak up. And if it means that me and, like, other ex-Muslims have to put their life on the line for others to speak up, then we got to do it. Because, like I said, they can't kill all of us.
Well said. Well said. Huda, any final words?
I'm very moved by your story, your whole life story. And it's interesting that, you know, you were in a Muslim country, you know, living Islam, and yet that wasn't enough for you to keep your faith and for that to be become a part of you. Like, you left, you know, that just goes to show for all these, you know, people who talk about making hijra and, you know, just because you go to an Islamic environment doesn't mean that you're going to stay with the religion. Right. Mm-hmm. So, also I think your experience with Christians was very, it touched my heart, because I had some good experiences with Christians as well when my husband passed. I'll never forget, at his janazah, there was like over 100 people, and the grave was surrounded by men, of course, and I couldn't even get up close and see him. And the person who comforted me was a Christian. She was, you know, one of the only Christians there. That's who came over and comforted me. And she even said, you know, why is she not up front? Why is the wife, you know, not front and center to, you know, watching her husband get buried? So that stuck with me throughout the years. And she also had a baby shower for me, which I appreciate as well. Yeah. So I had some very good experiences as well. And these things stick with you, you know, when you're a Muslim and you have these experiences with somebody like the Christians you were describing, you know, it has an effect on you. You're like, wow, there's something about them compared to the Muslims in the way I'm being treated. So, yeah.
And like I was saying, like, regardless of you believing that this story is true or not, the story of Jesus Christ has impacted so many lives, like, even if it's not true.
Yeah.
The concept of like dying, like Jesus saying, like, there's no greater love than dying for your friend, or him saying, like, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing, while he's being crucified.
Yeah.
That is a completely different view of philosophy on life than I've been commanded to kill the world until everyone says there's no God but Allah. And whoever leaves the religion, kill them. Like, you know what I mean? Regardless of it's true or not.
Right.
These philosophies, like, they're not compatible.
Right. And Muhammad killed people who made fun of him. Like, that's how.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
exactly.
I agree with you. You're right.
And all right, well, thank you, Huda. Ismail, any final words? So we shared your. I'm going to share your channel. Do you want to add any final words before we end off?
Honestly, I just hope you guys continue to keep doing what you're doing, and I hope everything gets better financially, and then everything keeps going good.
Yeah, thanks so much. And, you know, actually, I just want to mention to everyone that Ismail actually contacted me privately and offered to do a fundraiser for us for our channel. And so that was very much appreciated.
You didn't have to say that.
So, yeah, no, definitely highly encourage everyone to check out Ismail's channel, especially if you're Christian and you're interested in that sort of content. And I guess you're going to be talking about Muslim stuff, ex-Muslim stuff, too, in general, right?
I'll talk, honestly, I'm open to talk about anything and anyone. Like, if atheists or anyone want to talk to me, like, I'm open about anything.
Awesome. And it looks like
what happens.
It looks like we have to just keep dragging the show on because we keep getting super chats. M, thank you so much. Again, it's in favor of you. Hi, Ismail. I needed to hear this testimony. Thank you. So,
thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much, all of you. And okay, so that's the end of it. That's a wrap. So if those of you were new here, please do consider subscribing. We're doing a lot more shows now, live streams. And we have a new video coming out soon on Lily J. Huda has just been doing the final touches on that, so it'll be out soon.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she's something else. And yeah, just to end off, leave Islam behind. Life is better and more beautiful without it. Thanks, everyone. And thank you, Ismail.
See you guys.
Bye.